Welcome, everyone, to In the Loop. What is up, everybody? My name is Michael Burpo. Thanks again for listening to In the Loop. This week, I'm joined by M.A. Thomason and Ben Smithy to talk about men's fashion and kind of the direction we think it's going to start taking. It's a really interesting talk. We talk a little bit more high-level conceptual about why we think things are starting to shift in the way that they are, mainly towards it being more acceptable to talk about among groups of men, but also where the influences are coming from. And we talk about the influence that sports and sports figures are starting to take, as well as streetwear related to, for example, sneakers and maybe even NFTs, and how that will relate to it in the future. I really enjoyed this talk. It's a little bit more conceptual than we usually get. So if you like these, let us know and stick around. And a very special thank you goes out to Client Book for sponsoring this week's episode. Stick around and you'll hear more about them later on in the show. Thanks, everybody. This episode is brought to you by Punchmark, the jewelry industry's favorite website platform. Whether you're looking for better e-commerce performance, business growth, or campaigns that drive traffic and sales, Punchmark's website and marketing services were made just for you. It's never too late to transform your business with a user-friendly, point-of-sale integrated website platform designed for growth and results. Sign up for your free trial demo at punchmark.com.
This episode is brought to you by The Smithy Group, a digital growth agency that helps leaders and businesses dream bigger and achieve multi-generational integrity. Through insights and intelligence, digital marketing, and advertising solutions, we help businesses expand their reach, grow their revenue, and make an impact. TSG has helped hundreds of businesses surpass their goals and believe that whatever your business, whatever your story, we will make it matter to your audience.
And now, back to the show. Welcome back, everybody. I am joined by M.A. and Ben Smithy from The Smithy Group, and I'm really excited to be talking about men's fashion and kind of men's jewelry in general and kind of where we start to see the future of that. How are you guys doing today?
Excellent. Doing well and excited to chat about one of my favorite topics.
Yeah, me too. Doing great.
Ben, in case you haven't met Ben, just kind of frame the picture. Ben is always the best dressed at the different jewelry shows. Ben is the only person I know that actually seems like he really puts some real thought and effort into his in his outfits, which is definitely what we're going for today. Ben, where do you get your kind of your sense of fashion from? Where is there a place that you're getting inspiration for, or like how does that kind of formulate itself for you?
So for me personally, I mean, I grew up reading like GQ or Esquire, things like that. So it was always around, I was always into fashion though. So I think into that space, it's always been something I've been interested in, but that's now morphed into, you know, digital content. So everything that we're seeing on, you know, Instagram, Facebook, blogs, things of that nature. And then always through sort of bigger, large media. So when you look at movies, TV, film, things of that nature, that tends to be where I draw things and then try to make it my own. I think that for me, it's interesting. Like I'm into fashion and things of that nature. I wouldn't consider myself super like avant-garde when it comes to fashion. Like I'm definitely not Harry Styles or Timothy Chalamet or people of that. I don't take as many fashion risks or sort of nuance or like steps forward in that aspect. But I wear loud suits and glasses and things like that for sure. I'm very comfortable with that. And men's jewelry. I wear a lot of jewelry for a guy probably.
And that's the thing I'm most interested in is how people are willing to kind of put themselves out there. I come from a town very small and kind of what you would consider the real, you know, boondocks. And like everybody is wearing a lot of like flannel and boots and jeans sort of thing. And then I went to, I came down to Charlotte where it's a lot nicer. And it seems like people put a lot more time and consideration into what they're wearing. M.A., with being in New York City, do you find that kind of the fashion choices are becoming more kind of important just living in a major city, or is that kind of overblown in media?
Yeah, I think fashion, just seeing people out in the streets and seeing the different risks that they're taking and then different new trends that people are tapping into, you definitely see something new all the time, every season. So that's a great spot to look for inspiration, to look at what, you know, new trends you should start tapping into. It's reflected in the media. It's reflected in, you know, high fashion shows, but you can easily see it on the streets here. A lot of people are trying to be trendsetters.
Also, New York, yeah, anything goes, right? So Nothing really surprises you after you've lived in New York for a few years. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to fashion, anything goes with fashion. No one's really going to, people may stop and look, but there's not the same sort of judgmental attitude toward fashion here. Mm-hmm. And what's funny about what you're saying is when we're talking trends, Mike, you talk about sort of flannel and boots and things like that. One of the biggest trends right now is Carhartt. When you look at like your Carhartt jackets and your cowboy boots and like a traditional cowboy heel and stuff like that, you know, a male attest to it. Like I'm from Texas originally, so my cowboy is a bit authentic, but when it comes to New York City, like I'm fine. I wear my cowboy boots, I wear my Carhartt and all that type of stuff.
It's really interesting that both of you guys mentioned, you both used the word risk. And I think that that's something that is maybe undersold when it comes to putting yourself out there and putting yourself into or dipping your toe into fashion is being willing to kind of say, oh, this is what I like. And there's also there's no tried and true rule book when it comes to, you know, outfitting yourself. I mean, everybody says like, oh, you can't wear, you know, red and green or something like that. And then you go and you look at Gucci and they do it all the time. That's their brand colors, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even things like the other day, one of my friends was like, oh, can we still not wear white pants after Labor Day? And I was like, it's New York. Like, you can do whatever
winter
you
white.
Want. Yeah. Like, I was like, no, that's not a rule here. And I think people call it a risk because there's always that slight fear in your head of people, you know, if you post something on Instagram and you're wearing a crazy outfit, people would be like, oh, weird. But I think that there's a lot more people aren't as concerned about, you know, the different bold fashion choices, and they're not as judgmental about it as sometimes I think we are afraid that they are. A lot of people will be more commending towards, you know, introducing new styles and shaking things up in what's ordinary in fashion.
The other thing that's happened is mainstream, your least risky brands, if you will, and fashion houses of the world, your least risky ones of those have already gotten rid of that risk. They've taken things further than anyone. You look at the Balenciagas of the world, you look at the Gucci's of the world, you look at the, you know, Louis Vuitton in terms of actually capitalizing with things like, you know, Virgil Abloh and doing mixing high low fashion, street fashion with high style fashion, all those type of things. That really set a standard, you know. And so from an icon, when you talk about who I like, Virgil Abloh was a big inspiration for me in terms of what he was able to do to high end fashion and to change the game when it comes to a lot of those things in the way people think about fashion, not just from sneakers, but fashion overall. When you see Louis Vuitton do things with Supreme and you see these mashups, there's all sorts of stuff. And it even translates and trickles into jewelry, right? So I wear, if you saw my wedding ring, I have a ring that's, you know, it's gray gold. I went like platinum, palladium. It's like palladium and white gold mixture. So it's kind of like an off-white. It's like a gray. Well, it is gray. And my ring is 100% set with diamonds, like pave set diamonds on the inside, and it trickles on the outside. But then I'll wear like a stainless steel, like a black coated stainless steel ring stacked with it, with spinel or something like that. Like I'll wear high, low at the same time, or I'd be fine wearing like a, one of those Pura Vida rope bracelets next to a Cartier Roadster watch. So the rules are kind of broken, I'd say. And it's not just New York, but New York and LA kind of set those things and it trends toward the center. But
yeah,
I've always kind of thought that that's where things are starting to head is when I was growing up, I thought that like there was my interpretation of kind of high fashion was that you had to be wearing very over the top. Everything had to be, you know, very done up, whether from your shoes to your pants to your top as well. Everything had to be just, you know, very well kept. And I'm starting to see now that I think the trend is going towards people having something that is high and then also having a little bit more low at the same time. Like you were talking about having Carhartt is becoming, you know, a staple, but also I think that you can wear, what's beautiful about a lot of jewelry is you can wear, you know, a stainless steel watch with it, or you can wear something, one of these different types of bracelets, especially for men's fashion in general, or having a pair of, you know, a white t-shirt and jeans, and you can also just have a really nice pair of kicks with it, and suddenly it looks like you spent some time on your look, and which I think is kind of like a real step that only, at least for me, has come around in the last like probably 4 years or 5 years at this point. I don't know if I'm off on that.
Yeah. No, it maps back to cultural shifts too. And Mae can speak to this probably even more than I can when it comes to cultural norms and shifts. The way that we've moved culturally, it maps back to things like gender fluidity and openness to in redefining of what that looks like in as humans, right? It moves into if you look at, you know, we mentioned Harry Styles or Timothée Chalamet, or to a certain extent, even when you look at what, like Tom Holland, obviously he wears his for utilitarian reasons because Zendaya is so much taller than him, but he wears like giant heeled boots when he's on the red carpet and things like that. So when you look at these type of things, cultural norms are changing. So therefore, and not just in high fashion areas, if you look at like baseball, one of the trends that was, you know, really popular this year with men's fashion was pearls and like men's pearl necklace, right?
Yeah.
And so in that space, that actually came from the athletic space, right? When you look at like what happened there, that was pretty much when Jock Peterson did the like the pearl necklace thing. Everybody started wearing guys' pearls, and that wasn't from a fashion. He's not known for fashion, or he's not also like a model that does like high-end fashion shoots. He just did it because he liked it.
Yeah.
And so then that catches on, and then everybody's wearing pearls.
Yeah. I think, too, the way I see it, this shift of men's fashion becoming a little bit more feminine was pretty much inevitable. You know, if you look back way back to the roaring 20s, women didn't wear pants. You know, it was all skirts and dresses pretty much predominantly all over Western civilization. And then, you know, that started getting introduced by fashion designers like Chanel, who, you know, introduced trousers and pants for women. And now, you know, women in men's fashion is fairly fluid. You know, I wear a lot of outfits that any of my male coworkers would probably wear too.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of men's fashion getting a little bit more freedom is just kind of like the next iteration of that. And so, you know, you look at things like Harry Styles and his, you know, very gender fluid outfits being accepted into normal, you know, fashion for men. It's a really natural transition.
You know, you mentioned, Ben, the influence that sports has always had. And I've always thought that that influence has always been downplayed on a number of fronts, whether it comes from, you know, political influence or, you know, I guess we're talking about fashion influence, but I feel like there's a number of things that it has an impact on. But the number one, what's the number one shot that they're always showing before in pregame, before they actually show like clips from the game? It's always the athletes walking from the bus into the locker room.
Yep.
And I feel like that moment is almost like a mini, either red carpet or a mini catwalk or something like that, but like a little bit more kind of guerrilla style where they are willing to kind of put themselves out there. I mean, LeBron James and just his impact on...
Well, the Tom Brown suit with LeBron
yeah,
James, right?
Incredible.
LeBron James had everybody with the Tom Brown suits, like the three-quarter length jackets and the shorts and all these other things. Like, I think you're absolutely right when you look at what athletes do in that sort of mini runway. That's you call that's the right way to look at it, is they're, whether it's headphones and the attire they wear, whether it's the jeweler that they're trying to plug, or whether it's the watch brand they're trying to plug, or the fashion they're trying to plug, or their own shoes. You know, when we look at that, even it's not, and we talk about high-low, it's no longer price anymore, because a Carhartt jacket, you can spend $500 on a Carhartt jacket. You can spend, you know, $350,000 on the Virgil Abloh Air Force Ones that just sold,
yeah,
right?
I saw those.
So it's not necessarily the type of fashion, because price is across the board on anything. Remember when we were in, well, I say me, I'm older than both of you, but when I was in elementary school, Champion and Fila were not the hot brands.
Yeah.
They were the opposite, right? And so now when you look at Champion pop-up stores and Fila and all these things that are expensive, you look at New Balance shoes going for like $500. Come on, man. So the times shift big time.
Do you, at least, Emma, with your friends that might be around kind of our age, do you find that there's a increase in kind of the acceptability of talking about fashion? Because I know that, at least for mine, and this is like a very small sample size that we're looking at, just two groups of friends, you couldn't really talk about what you were wearing. At least, you know, through high school and even college, it was very much, I wouldn't say taboo, but it was like what you were wearing was just a moderate self-expression. And now it's becoming like a conversation piece, and it's starting to work itself into kind of what the everyday topics are, not just in what celebrities are doing, but it's also like, you know, I think with the concept of these limited drops or these, you know, ultra rare premiums, like through Supreme kind of really started like the push for it. I feel like it's becoming more okay to talk about it as though it's like a way to express yourself.
Yeah, I think absolutely there used to be a little bit more of a stigma around, oh, the way I dress is effortless. Like, I didn't think about this at all. I just threw this on. And that was kind of like, yeah, if you're able to look really amazing and it looks effortless, then that's just kind of a nod to your eye and your sense of, you know, aesthetics and fashion. And so, and now I would agree that there is a little bit of a shift of, this is art. Like, this is me curating something. It's a form of creativity every day. It reflects me, just like if I got a tattoo, would reflect me, because it's, you know, it's a choice that reflects my personality and things that I'm aesthetically drawn to. And especially with fashion that roots back to different celebrities or things in culture. Like, I just got this shirt the other day that I found in a boutique, and it came from this artist in the Philippines who made it out of flower sacks. And I was like, that's such a cool story. And when I bought it, I was thinking about how this is going to be so cool because people are going to ask about this shirt, and I'll tell them, like, this is from this awesome artist in the Philippines. And I would love to talk about it, and people are going to ask about it. And it's that ultimately reflects back to my personality and the activities that I do and the things that I'm drawn to. And it says that I'm interested in stories and these cultures. And so I think people are, yeah, absolutely a lot more open to conversation around particular clothing articles.
Yeah, that hit on, I think that right there, what Amay was just saying, the narrative is the crux of all of it.
Yeah, I agree.
So the narrative, and this ties it back up to a marketing and advertising and higher level to a branding conversation. There's the narrative that it means to you, and there's the narrative it means to other people. And the third thing is sort of the hybrid of the narrative that empowers you to be able to tell other people.
Yeah.
That's what's powerful about a brand. That's what's powerful about the piece of clothing that Amay was just talking about. Not only was it cool because it fit her own style narrative, and she likes unique things, and she likes unique stories and artisanal things, but in her mind when she bought this, and she was being transparent there around, if I wear this, it's going to empower me to be able to tell a cool story to my friends or whomever asks about it. That's why people want historically the big engagement rings and things like that. Not only is it the narrative of success, but it's the narrative when people are able to tell that story down the line. And that is the direction where branding is going. It's like, okay, if I wear XYZ brand, what narrative does this empower for me to be able to tell someone? If I work with a boutique designer, what is his or her story that I'm able to pull from when I wear this ring? And when somebody asks me about my wedding ring, I'm able to talk about this story. When somebody asks me about this pocket square, I can talk about how it was handmade in X, Y, and Z. You know, those type of things are really, really important. The brand story, like, I believe that brand is more important than ever.
Absolutely.
Right? In terms of a holistic brand, it's when we see products, services, or organizations, companies, direct to consumer, all these things flooding the market on a minute by minute basis, brand is the only thing that really matters. And having a lack of a brand, if you will, is also having a brand, right? So when it comes to that type of stuff, I think that what Amay really just hit on around the narrative is the biggest thing. If we tie this back to a business standpoint, what this means from the business world, brand is the only thing that matters in that space. If you're not intentionally branding yourself or the thing, then it doesn't really have that power of story, and story is everything. Whether it's story to yourself that creates internal value, story to other people that creates external value, that's what it is. Story is currency, and that's why content is so important today. That's why we're in the content world. That's why influencers work, all that type of stuff.
Yeah. Man, story is currency. I always get one soundbite from Ben Smithy, and I love it. I appreciate it. Guys, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with more about, maybe tie it right into jewelry. this episode is brought to you in part by ClientBook. Acquiring new customers is the lifeblood of your jewelry business. However, far too often, customers drop in, make a purchase, and then disappear, often for good. On the other hand, clients are different than customers. A client wants personalized offers and services, and they trust you and your salespeople for product advice. So, how do you turn a customer into a client and deliver personalized experiences when you have thousands of them? That's where ClientBook comes in. It's the mobile clienteling app built for jewelers. Here's how it works. With ClientBook, you'll never miss a follow-up or forget an important event in the lives of your clients. Birthdays, anniversaries, graduations, and more. You can send automated mass or individual messages, create customizable message templates, easily solicit reviews, and capture leads through the ClientBook web chat. ClientBook lets you send professional product images via text to a client in seconds and put together personalized wish lists and collections based on products your clients like. Discover why the world's leading jewelers use ClientBook to build long-term relationships with their clients and expand the in-store experience beyond the four walls of your store. To learn more and schedule a personalized demo for your store, visit clientbook.com/demo. Again, that's clientbook.com/demo. Thanks, and back to the show. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us. I'm talking with MA and Ben Smithy here. Guys, I wanted to sort of talk about the story behind, you know, specifically men's fashion, but men's jewelry as well. I feel like it's always kind of sort of just kind of put in a corner and sort of or left in a box and said like, oh, this is like the stuff we have for men. And what I got from Ben and MA talking about things that really speak to them, especially when you come to MA's story about this shirt and how it has like this amazing conversation piece behind it. I feel like that's something that needs to be done up more for men, because, you know, as much as we like to think that men don't like wearing jewelry or men don't care, you know, about this backstory, it's obviously been told or shown that that's not completely true. Are there any good examples of like men's fashion or men's jewelry that's really starting to kind of tell the bigger story?
Yeah, so I think that the fact that we're seeing more men wearing jewelry or wearing accessories or things of that nature shows that there is an inherent desire to storytell, and that's not gender specific, right? So the fact is, we have to equip guys with more of a story and an easier story to tell, and one that's more direct and to the point and less fluffy and things like that historically and traditionally.
Yeah.
And we've just not been good at doing that. We've offered men, do you want a yellow gold band, a white gold band, a platinum band, or a black band? You know? And yeah, guys, if they really are into it, it's watches, right?
Yeah. End of story.
And they wear the Rolex because they can't drive the Lamborghini into the restaurant for the meeting, right? So they wear the Rolex, they wear the Oris, they wear the all the, you know, the brands that give status. So it's a different story that they've been. To guys, I believe in historically, it's been about a status story. But because status has shifted into limited editions, you know, Supreme and Louis Vuitton or limited edition Nikes or things like that, all of a sudden the story for guys no longer is limited to Gucci, Rolex, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot more, literally a lot more color to the story, a lot more diversity to the story, and a lot more different areas where guys can tell stories with their fashion than just luxury and success and elitism. Does that make sense?
I think so. I think, I mean, exhibit number one, I went out as him for Halloween this year, but Jake Paul, for his boxing match, you know, walked out with a $1 million PSA 10 Charizard, you know, a Pokemon card with a diamond, you know, band around it on a lanyard. And he literally walked out there and he kind of flexed on who he's fighting against was Floyd Mayweather, saying like, oh, this is actually worth more than your necklace. And it has a better story that goes along with it, because the only thing people cared about was that he wore a $1 million Pokemon card around his neck. And it's like, I guess that kind of is like an exhibit of like, yeah, I guess there is a story that wants to be told.
Yeah. And this pivots even further into, a space that we've been talking a lot about internally, which is virtual, right? So you'd have to be hiding under a rock today if you didn't hear about crypto and NFTs and metaverse and all that other stuff. But I think the next area that we'll start to see, and people will literally laugh out loud when they hear this because they still think it's a joke, but like virtual fashion and virtual currencies and virtual worlds, like Ame is going to be buying that shirt, but she's also going to want the NFT that comes with that, but also the avatar currency and the avatar outfit that goes with that shirt, the virtual outfit, so she can fit it on one of her virtual collections of dolls or virtual avatars in the metaverse when she's in her Oculus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like another manifestation of me showing I chose this, it's part of my personality. It shows that I'm an explorer and like went out and find unique things rather than just buying from all the big brands. And that's something that I want to be reflected in my digital identity, just like I want all these other aspects of myself to be reflected in this, you know, digital identity that I'm building.
It's that signaling, I think, that a lot of people are looking for. I mean, just like Ben was saying, why do people wear a Rolex? Man, this is going to really annoy some people that are listening. They're like, oh, Rolexes are amazing watches. And it's like, yeah, true.
I love them. They are. But there's a reason why there's just as other expensive watches out there. But Rolex is Rolex because of what it signifies. Same thing with Patek Philippe, right? If you wear a Patek, even their whole brand is you never really own a Patek. You just hold on to it for the next generation.
Oh, that's right? A great line.
So in that space, it's just the premium of premiums. So, and it's not that it's just Rolex, it's what it represents. What Rolex signifies is when you own a Rolex, you're like, oh, they made it. Or at least their mom or dad made it or someone. Yeah.
So that actually ties into my only experience with NFTs at this point. So the brand, actually the sweatshirt that I'm wearing right now, no one can see what I'm wearing except for you guys, but is a group called 100 Thieves. They're my favorite esports team. And they won a championship in a game that's really prestigious called League of Legends. And to reward their players, they gave them each a necklace that had the logo embossed in diamonds. It was worth a whole bunch of money each, and it was like a really cool thing. The next day, they released a free-to-mint copy, a digital copy of the same necklace, and every fan who is a fan of theirs could go and obtain their own and put it into their wallet. So I have a copy of that necklace that all the winners got. I mean, granted, it doesn't have diamonds and sapphires cut into it, but I do feel a little bit connected with it. And I think it's a really interesting kind of concept because it cost them $0. I just think that if someone is going to move into the NFT space or into the crypto space, especially in the world of jewelry, where people are inherently not very willing to buck the trends, especially when you see it with, like, for example, lab grown diamonds versus real natural diamonds. I think that it has to be done extremely delicately and well thought out and offer like inherent value to it.
Yeah, but remember, value is a proposition. Value is not a solid state thing. So value, we have to think about, and we as the industry and business owners and business leaders have to think about value and truly what it is. Not value in terms of romance of how we've made our money or how we've defined value, because we're not in the how we define value business. We're in the how does the consumer define value business. So if the consumer is willing to pay $1,000 for a rubber Kalo ring, then it's worth $1,000. It's not worth the $20, right? If the consumer is willing to pay an extra, you know, 10% on something to have a virtual version of it that they can put on their avatar or hold in their NFT wallet or whatever it may be, then it's worth an extra 10% to them. That said, if we're not embracing that and moving into that space, how do we create and educate the consumer market to where they build that perceptual value to it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I think that we have to make sure as an industry that we are providing enough information and education that consumers can perceive and associate value with these things.
You know, I think that the one space that I could find that interesting is the especially applicable. I'm not much of a, you know, a jewelry buyer right now, but one day, you know, maybe I buy an engagement ring, and that feels like a very, at least with everybody that I've interviewed for these ring buyer episodes that we've had in the past, they feel very, it feels like a momentous occasion. Like they really, like it defines almost their year. Like what's a big purchase that you made? Well, I bought an engagement ring, and they can tell you the story about it. I feel like that kind of should be kind of, they should get like a, yeah, like a little certificate about that. And I think in the end, that's kind of could be a valuable spot for it. But again, it's like, why do we feel so momentous about it? Or like, why is it such like, it's almost like bigger than buying a house. Like people feel more caught up in the idea of buying their engagement ring than they do with like something that's even more expensive, which is a house. I don't know.
I think it's what it represents, right? Because it's a thing that represents the only thing that's worth more than a thing.
Yeah.
In a weird way, right? So it's a product that's worth, that represents an intangible thing, love or relationship or commitment, that's worth more than any product can be worth.
Yeah.
So therefore, the tokenization of that emotional worth has inherent real world value to it. What's interesting is that's the whole notion of virtual and digital, that as soon as we start living more of our lives in the metaverse or XYZ, we start gaining more value and emotional sentiment and attachment to that virtual world. So therefore, we're able to spend and we'll dedicate more value and currency to enhancing that virtual experience in our virtual lives, just like we do use a token or a totem to signify something that's intangible, like love or commitment. That just got real meta, like real deep, but that's...
Wow, we just dove right in with our heads. Yeah, this is good. Guys, as we wrap this up, I kind of want to, I love predictions, and I kind of want to just kind of make a couple guesses about where we think men's fashion in particular is going. I think that the next sort of future of it is going to have something to do with more variety. I find that it's not necessarily, just like with, I always use earrings as an example. I find that, you know, women in particular, or at least it's targeted towards women, have everything from studs, hoops, chandelier, you know, dangle, you know, bars, everything from there. And kind of when it comes to men, there's like, you know, studs and hoops more or less. But I do find that there's becoming increasingly jewelry is sort of becoming expanded to, for example, you know, headphones like Beats by Dre, or, you know, sneakers, which are, you know, kind of more or less a piece of jewelry because you wear it for special occasions. If you guys had to make predictions, where would you think it's going?
I think that I agree, variety, but also uniqueness. With women's fashion, there's a lot of different options. Everyone's trying to find something that makes them kind of stand apart, whether it's, you know, a unique pattern, a unique cut. And I think with men's fashion right now, a lot of men that I know will try and find uniqueness in their fashion through, you know, just a hoodie that says something kind of weird on it, or a hat or a t-shirt, but it's still not great for that uniqueness factor. And so, especially with jewelry, if it's colorful, if it stands out, if it makes someone ask questions, that kind of a thing, that kind of introduction of variety, I can see coming, especially in the new year. And also, very particular in jewelry, I think brooches, men's brooches. That's one aspect of jewelry that it's not as owned by women. It's also like very, very popular with men, as well as cufflinks. In the most recent Met Gala, you know, A$AP Rocky had that brooch, and that made a huge statement and introduced a whole new way of brooches, especially in fall fashion, winter fashion, when you're dressing up a little bit more. And it's a way to make your suit and your outfit more unique, where, you know, women, you have your dress, you have your earrings, your necklaces, and all these things when you're going to a great occasion. But for men, there's not as many options. And so that's one way to make your outfit stand out a little bit more.
Yeah. We had Michael O'Connor on, and he was a big fan of the lapel pin. And he's like,
oh, yeah, he's a big man brooch pin.
He's like, oh, you can call a lapel pin, you can call a brooch, call a man brooch. I don't care. It's just cool. You know, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, he's always been that. I always try to wear some sort of like lapel pin or boutonniere type thing. I think that it's hard for me to see where men's jewelry is going to go, but I do think that it's going to increase both in variety and uniqueness. But I think that inherently, to me, what it all says, it's going to increase in value. So I think that men are going to be willing to spend and wear things that have inherently more value, because we're starting to see that. And it started in like music and movies and hip hop and things like that. But that started to move into influencers and micro influencers and musicians and artists and things of that nature, to where the more out there they're going and the more they're pushing the boundaries, a little bit watered down version of that hits the mainstream public. And so the further they go, the more it's going to stretch the middle. And I think that's what we're seeing now, is that we're going to start seeing, like, when people will pay monthly for a Whoop band, right, to track, which is a bracelet, but even though it's tech enabled, right, they're starting to pay for jewelry. And whether it's tech that gets them there, whether it's their favorite influencer that gets them there, whether it's a different accessory, I think there's going to be an inherent value that people are willing. It's going to start cracking the ceiling of value that what men will pay for jewelry.
Yeah. I mean, also with like the ability to wear it comfortably, I find is just increasingly important, because people don't want to have the opportunity to break it or something like that. And like a lot of people wear those Whoop bands and they don't even think about it. And I think that's kind of also important. At least I've only been a guy, so I can only speak to that. I think that it's increasingly important that what I wear is not going to be uncomfortable. So I'm always looking for that kind of comfort fit as well. But all of that to say, thank you guys so much for coming on. This is honestly a more conceptual talk than we've done in the past, and I really enjoy it. I hope that we do a couple more of these and expand to more topics. I think that you guys are really interesting, and I think that there's a lot more that we could go into. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, man.
Everybody, we'll be back next week on Tuesday with more episodes. Thank you very much, Ben and MA, for joining me. And we'll talk to you on the next one. Thanks, everybody. Bye. Hey, thanks for listening. If you made it this far, remember to leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and try subscribing on Spotify. It really helps us grow. New episodes in your subscription box every Tuesday. Thanks again. Talk to you next week.